Glassland, which is the second feature film from writer-director Gerard Barrett, starring Jack Rayner, Tony Collette and Will Poulter. It premiered at Sundance earlier this year to strong reviews, particularly, of course, for its cast. We've heard about the awards there too. Jack Rayner's star is very much on the rise after a stunning performance in What Richard Did. He caught the eye of the Hollywood bigwigs and ended up in the latest Transformers film before coming back home to make Glassland. And Kerry man Gerard Barrett made his presence known with the impressive Pilgrim Hill, his debut feature, which he wrote and directed and which won him an IFTA Rising Star Award in 2013. Now he's back with another interesting exploration of an Irish family, this time in Glassland. Set in Dublin, Glassland tells the story of a young taxi driver, played by Rayner, who gets tangled up in a world of human trafficking while trying to save his mother, played by Tony Collette, from addiction and looking out for his younger brother as well. Before we talk to Jack and Gerard, who's joining the studio, let's take a clip.
So how are we going to get new plates?
Now.
I'm going to buy the new plates, man. I'm going to go out and work my arse off for the rest of the week driving a taxi. And what are you going to do? You're going to drink and drink and drink. And you're going to pass out in that bed. But I'm going to go out and work to buy those new plates so we can have something to eat off. So we're not eating off the table.
You're a good boy, John.
Guys, I'm going to say it to both of you here, and to, just in terms of the actual movie itself then. In fact, I'll tell you, I'll start with you, Mr. Barrett. Would it be fair to say that it's a basically a kind of a clear-eyed look at alcoholism and the effect that it can have on one person?
I think it's a clear-eyed look at addiction and the impact it can have on a family. That's very much kind of what I was after anyway, was just kind of like to talk about the collateral damage that, you know, addiction can have on a family. And specifically on the people that are around the person with the disease of addiction. And it was hugely important for me to kind of focus on the kids. And that's what I wanted to do with this. And that's why I think, you know, people were excited to come on board, was because I wasn't trying to tell the story of the addict. I was trying to tell the story of the people trying to cope with the addict. And that was kind of what I wanted to do.
Right. Yeah. And Jack, from your point of view, from your character's point of view, is it a question for you sometime, like just somewhere in your head, when does one give up on a family member? I mean, you're the carer here, and actually you could be bringing the two of you down if you do what people would see as the right thing. You might be better off doing the wrong thing in the world.
You know, I guess to a degree, that's kind of where the jeopardy is in the film of, you know, like, is this guy going to ultimately give up on his mother? And is that something that, you know, a human being can easily do? But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, just the fact that he really sticks by her and he goes to the nth degree to kind of save her from herself is a testament to what sons can be like with their mothers. Do you know what I mean? And it's important. And I think it's actually quite hopeful, really, at the end.
Okay, but like, it is a familiar story right across the board in some ways. The people who don't necessarily relate to it can suddenly look at this and say, it's basically about families who just don't have a regular income or enough money, and just what that can then do with the disease that goes with it.
Yeah, and I think I think what's exciting for us is, because we're up and down the country with it, and we were over in the UK doing press all this week with it, was, is that, you know, it's addiction affects mostly every family on the planet, some way, shape, or form. And, you know, some people are addicted to fame, some people are addicted to food, some people are addicted to sex, and it whether it's drugs or any other type of substance. And I think what comes with all of that is a lot of loneliness and a lot of isolation and a lot of pain for family members. And I think that's what we just wanted to tap into. It's universal. I mean, that feeling of hopelessness.
All right, but also the loneliness, the isolation, the pain and the hopelessness that you have to convey in this movie, Jack. I mean, basically what's happening is you're living with a stranger, and that's really what you have to sort of accept, first of all. But like, you have to convey these emotions without words, and you have to kind of do all this twitching, and you have to do this thinking and quite a lot of tapping as well, etc. I mean, does Gerard sit you down and say, no, you don't get it. This is what I want you to do here. I want you to do virtually nothing but just make those eyes work.
No, but I think that maybe Gerard would actually be more qualified to answer this question than I would, in a way.
No, I think, you know, all I'm after is just...
But Gerard, hold on, we're talking about silent rage, and we're talking also about tension in a movie.
Yeah, yeah. But I think all I'm after more than anything is just to be real and put yourself in that situation. Put yourself as that situation in that world, and how would you react? And I think a lot of the time is, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, I look at tragedy in life and problems, and I kind of go, you know, people don't talk then when things are bad and when things are rough, and it's very much what's said in the silence is the most important thing for me. And that's a challenge, I think, when you're making a film like this, because, you know, we're kind of brought up on a multiplex diet of cinema, and I think what comes with that a lot of the time is loud noise, lots of music, and this is how you're supposed to feel at this present moment. Why I knew Jack was perfect for this film was I knew he can do a lot without saying a lot, and that was the most important thing, is to portray that kind of, you know, that anger and that angst and that pain.
And the tough lives that people have out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Just before I go back to the movie, I'm going to go over to you, Jack, just about your life. And this is a terrible sequitur, if that's the right word for it. Mm. Here it goes. But you had a remarkable early life in some ways. I mean, like, it really is pretty strange. Just somebody put, in fact, there was I had a quote there somewhere, I can't remember, I'll find it in a second or two, which I thought was absolutely brilliant in terms of the life you led. And where you can go on to do Transformers. Is the degree to which your fortunes have changed since the early days makes a car turning into a huge giant robot seem just like a party trick by comparison. It's pretty bizarre,
isn't it? That's an interesting. I wonder who said that, actually.
Yeah. Well, isn't that pretty bizarre? Like, it is true, isn't it? Like, I mean, your early days, just take us through them for a second or two, because you haven't been on with us before, which is just very briefly. It's just that you were born in a small town in Colorado.
I was born in Boulder, Colorado, just outside Denver.
Because your parents had just gone over there from Ireland.
Well, my grandparents had gone over with my mother, who was, you know, 19 when she went to America, and her brother, who was 17. And I was born over there in 1992, and then I was brought back to Ireland. They'd all come from Ireland initially. They left because it was a very difficult time economically in the late
80s. You wouldn't remember much of your time there necessarily, but you do remember certain things. You remember going to look at airplanes with your grandfather. Yeah. Such a, but your mother has told you what it was like over there. It was pretty damn horrendous.
It was a grim period in my family's life. I think it was certainly a hard time for them in a number of ways. And then they came home to Ireland in 1994, and to be honest, for the first few years, it really didn't get much better. And then I went up to go to secondary school in Dublin. My mom got married to a guy from Dublin, who is amazing, and I have the best stepfather in the world. I'm just blessed that I had him. But, you know, we moved up to Dublin, and I was lucky enough to be accepted into a really good school on the north side on a scholarship, you know, because we really didn't have the money to pay for it at all. So I got in there, and I was really taken care of, and they helped to develop me to go and do the things that I wanted to do, and, you know, it worked out that way. It is unbelievable. I wake up pinching myself every day, and it's, in a way, with the amount of work that I've been doing over the last couple of years, it's been hard to have the time to process all that and think about it, but I'm trying to make a very definitive decision to take time off to do that now.
Right, but in doing the work and in making movies like this one here, or the big ones in Hollywood or whatever it happens to be, it does make your mother feel very good and very proud, and I would imagine there's a huge percentage of you following your dream to make damn sure that your mother's life is going to be as good as it could possibly be, because when you hear the story of when you grew up in Denver, I mean, we're talking the most bizarre things of, like, no electricity, the church having to pay for half the bloody food you got, even if the donuts you got were bloody 2 weeks old from something, where you were the only white people there with Hispanics queuing up to get the damn stuff in the free. Like, it was really, like, you didn't know this, obviously, you were too young.
No, of
but
course.
But it was pretty bizarre what she had to go through.
It was a bizarre time. And there's a story of her bringing me into, like, a soup kitchen when we were, I mean, I was, like, only a couple of weeks old, or maybe a month or two old at the time, so. Yeah, there is all that. But I mean, a lot of families, I think, kind of experience these things even in Ireland. There's a lot of people here who you might not know, but who, you know, aren't doing particularly well economically and go through these things.
But you were doing all of this right through the whole thing, through the supposed sort of growth of the Celtic Tiger, without realizing what a Celtic Tiger was, whatever.
Yeah.
And certainly you weren't part of it.
Absolutely,
but one reason I'm going back with all this, I want to just look at one thing, because it's kind of a Dickensian kind of scene you were doing. Around the ages of 7, 8, or 9, the turn of the century, whatever it happens to be, were you helping, was it an uncle or something, to deliver stuff in a freezing van? I hope I've got this one.
No, it was my grandfather.
It was a grandfather. Okay, fine.
Yeah, who I called Dad, because I didn't have, like, a dad growing up, so he was my dad, and he still is. But yeah, he worked for a company called Clare Oil and Foods, and we basically used to, and there's a plug for them. but we used to drive around. He used to pick me up after school, and we'd drive around, you know, like Clondalkin or Talla or Walkinstown, and we'd knock on like 100 doors a night, either side.
At the age of 7, 8, or 9.
7, 8, or 9. And you want to see people's reactions to that are really interesting. But it's good. That stuff builds character, you know?
As in, where's your father?
Where's your father? Or, you know, they kind of slam the door in your face more than you'd expect. Yeah, right. A child at that age to have that happen. But, character building stuff, I'd say.
Character building stuff, I'd say as well.
But you can see when you watch Glassland, whatever anyone thinks about the film, you can't deny that his performance, he's using all that.
That's what I'm saying. You know? That's what I'm getting to.
And it's
right,
just,
but I say I'm getting to that if you go to Glassland
here. Of course,
I want to go through Richard because, like, you know, in terms of what Richard did in the movie, etc., which was the one that everybody heard about from first and that. And was that just a movie, that even though it was very big and Lenny Abrahamson and all the rest, and you did loads of work before to set it up and get it right and that, it still wasn't necessarily going to do anything, was it? Until it what? Goes to a Toronto Film Festival or...
And it did really well over there. I think there was always going to be... I think we always anticipated a kind of a interesting response, at least, from the Irish audience, you know? I thought that it would at least be a divisive film here. But it really did incredibly well over in Toronto. And that's actually how Jer and I met each other, because we both had films over there that year. And yeah, it was a great experience. And I loved working with Lenny, and I'd love to do another film with Lenny in the not too distant future. And it was great to portray a character like that who I'd kind of observed as I went to secondary school. And, you know, I'd hung out with people and I knew people who were like Richard. But it's very much, you know, the case that I was on the periphery of that kind of thing, observing and looking inwards at it. And I think that that was critical in that particular performance as well, you know.
Okay, well, the film Jared he's talking about here, I presume he's talking Pilgrim Hill in terms of your film that you were in Toronto with, is that correct?
Yeah, and Telluride, yeah.
Okay, now, so if you were there with that, that's one that you had handed to me a couple of years before that at the Kerry Film Festival on a DVD or whatever.
No, I was literally that summer, I was the Kerry Film Festival asked me to do something at the festival, and you were there and you kindly spoke to me and had a chat with me, and you asked me what I was doing, and I said I have this film that I'm working on, and I just always happened to have one with me, and I just gave it to you, and I assume you never watched it, and that's totally fine.
I mentioned it on the radio before we get to that. Just who, like, it's about that movie is,
yeah,
and a guy having to look after his invalid farmer father,
yeah, in rural Ireland, yeah. I
mean, there are huge comparisons, with all due respect, between the plot line for that and Glassland here, which is, you know, south, which is a Dublin suburb.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much everything's related, and you know, Pilgrim Hill and Glassland, and is very much part of a trilogy of films for me, and the next one is it's not the next one I'm doing, but the one that will kind of end that, you know, trilogy of what I always wanted to do was make three films about, you know, the Irish male and the vulnerability of the Irish male that we don't see enough of, because I feel that we grew up in a very macho society here, in a way that, where, you know, I think what Jack brought to the character was something beautiful, where he would hold his mother's hand. That's not a thing a lot of Irish men do, you know?
Yeah.
And we wanted to evoke that. So, I mean, for me, it was isolation and loneliness. It can, you know, it can strike you when you're at your lowest. And as Jack and myself have observed, we've been lucky enough to work in this industry, it can strike you at your most successful. And that's what I like to tap into, and there is a link between the two of them, very much so. And it's and I think what it is, it's family, you know? It's family.
And there will be a third one.
I mean, I have a third one about another Irish male, and as far as I'm concerned, the ultimate Irish male. And, you know, the first two guys shouldn't really have a lot to complain about, because, you know, that generation that I'm focusing on in that film kind of had to survive, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Okay, well, now you're doing Glassland is now, and you're on the back of the big success in Hollywood in terms of Transformers and that, and what might doors that might open as well. So, I mean, in fact, yeah, what doors is that going to open, do you think?
I mean, like, well, I've done kind of seven films back to back now.
Yeah.
So since Transformers, the last five that I've done were Glassland, which is obviously out this week. There's a Royal Night Out that comes out next month. It's a film about the night of VE Day, about, you know, Princess Margaret and Princess Elizabeth, and there's a kind of a love story that may or may not have happened there.
Yeah.
So I'm in that one, and then Macbeth is coming up with Michael Fassbender, which is going to be, I'm very excited about that film.
The Kerryman.
Yeah, there you go. I love the Kerryman. Yeah, great chaps to work with. And then
can I just say, you didn't do Macbeth for the Leaving Cert by any chance?
I didn't, unfortunately. I did King Lear.
Did you?
So then there's The Jungle Book, which is Rudyard Kipling's Jungle Book.
Yeah.
It's very, very much a darker story than the Disney cartoon.
And there's Sing Street as well.
Sing Street, John Carney's film, another Irish one, and Secret Scripture, Jim Sheridan's film. So I'm trying to keep a good slate of Irish films going along with all the international
stuff. I bumped into Jim on the street the other day. Is filming finished, is it?
Principal photography is finished.
Principal photography. Have you learned all this stuff, Jared? No, thanks. Well, you're going to have to if you're going to work with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Are you going to be working with Leo, yeah? Yeah, working on a project with him. It's a book that I optioned myself that has a very strong Irish connection. And he reached out to me to work on it together, and very exciting, very humble.
Okay, I'm going to ask, Leonardo DiCaprio reaches out to you to work on something. Why does he reach out to you? What's so great about Jared?
We're very lucky. We've got we share an agent, and his name is James Farrell. He's from County Meath, and he's been an incredible person in my life, and I can assume the same in your life. And he opens doors to possibilities, and he puts you out there in a sense where that people can see you. Within the industry, and it just happens like that. It's a very small, tight industry, and at the end of the day, all these filmmakers have a point of view in the world, and I have a point of view in the world. He happens to like it, and that's how it goes. It's
okay.
Very
when people talk about optioning and books, etc., and how one does it, and adapted screenplays, etc. Now, this is a book from last year, a debut Irish novel. You're not going to tell us what it is, are you?
No, because there's so much, as I said, collateral damage with announcing things too early of and course. All that stuff. And it's going to be announced really soon. It's very, very exciting, and it's not the only Irish thing as well that I'm working on with someone cool. So it's very exciting, and I'm incredibly proud to be working on it
Other things that you might be working on, would that be your own work? Would that be your own writing even?
Yeah, I mean, I like to be the author of my own success or my own failure. Right. And so I option all my own books, I write all my own scripts, I write all my own original screenplays. And then if something comes along like Brain on Fire from Charlize Theron and her company, then I'll look at that and I'll take it. And if that's right for me, then I'll do it. But I like to be in there at the very, very start. I like to be in the kitchen, I like to be, planning what we're going to do.
Again, Brain on Fire, you've just mentioned and threw out the name Charlize Theron, and also my cousin's in there too, Dakota Fanning. Okay, she's not. And she's in the movie as well. Now, both of those, it's about somebody with a mystery illness
It's an incredible book. It's a New York Times bestselling novel. It's a memoir. It's incredible. It's about a girl in New York that has it all and loses it all. She gets a mystery illness. No doctor can diagnose it in America. It's frightening. It's probably the most isolating and frightening position to be in. Is in that position that she finds herself in, and in her whole family it just starts to just fall apart.
Okay, and I will assume it's a performance driven movie, as Incredibly Glassland performance-driven. Would be too. Yeah. So I have to ask, if you had a chance to do a Michael Bay Sherrod Barrett doing a Michael Bay, discuss.
No, I mean, it's again, I have a point of view in the world. I like to see the cracks, and I like to talk about the cracks in the world. Yeah. And I go and see the Transformers movies, I go and see all those types of movies, I appreciate those types of movies, and the one thing that I do appreciate is the hard work that goes into those types of movies. And believe me, there is nobody that can make a Transformers movie but Michael Bay.
Oh, very absolutely true. No question. So on that subject, I might as well keep going with that one there. I mean, like, what do you do? Like, when you arrive, okay, let's first of all take a look at the process by which you got the movie. You were in New York and you were going to LA for something, and then there was a hurricane, whatever it was, and you stayed 2 extra weeks because of the hurricane, and in that time there was a reading for Transformers or something.
Yeah, basically there was a couple of different meetings set up, and I went and met Michael Bay, and we got on very well together, and then I read for him a couple of times on the film and kind of went through a test process with him, and that was it. Then I went back to New York and I got a call around Christmas time from him to say that I'd got it.
No, that's not true. You got a call from a Christmas time to say you didn't get it.
That's true.
And then he said, only joking, you got it.
Dave, there was another phone call which I think we need to talk about, because then I got a phone call at Christmas saying, can you wait a year to make Glassland, because I'm after getting Transformers.
Oh, you could do
so,
without that.
It was the best call I ever got.
Well, in one way it was. Yeah,
it was, because
nothing you can do. Yeah.
No, but what happened was, I had a year to really put the film together the way I wanted to, so I could get Tony Collette and Will Poulter and Michael Smiley. Jack went off, made that film for 8-9 months, whatever it was, and he did come back a different man, and he came back a man that really wanted to be in Dublin for those 16 days.
Yeah,
and I think you can feel that in the performance. He wanted to be there. And he missed home and he wanted to be at home. And I was so happy to facilitate an environment where he could be at home and he could be his best, in a sense.
Yeah.
So.
By the way, in terms of rising stars and all the rest of it, fair play to you for getting Will Poulter for that movie.
He's amazing.
He's fantastic.
Yeah. He's a bit of an out whatever in the movie, you're saying. You know, like, I mean, because the difference between the way you and with your mother, and like she comes in with the cup of tea and she gets in the way in the TV, you know, that says it all. In the same way as your character in the movie says it all, with just the cleaning of the teeth, just the watering down the milk for the breakfast, or trying to find the spoon in the dirty thingy bob. I mean,
but like Will Poulter's character is equally as tragic in a sense.
Oh, no,
he is somebody. Yeah, I know, but he's also
the comedy.
Yeah, no, in a sense, but he is somebody that has it all, and he doesn't even realize it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
he's going to go away traveling or whatever, and he's going to figure out, oh my God, and he's gone through his own little troubles with a lot, you know, young fatherhood in a sense. And I think what's beautiful is that Jack's character John sees that, you know, that young child, and he wants to make sure he has a father.
Yeah.
And that's why he maneuvers away where Will's character can do that.
And the mother in the movie, the centre of the movie in terms of not just you, Jack, is Toni Collette, she'd be my top favourite 10 actresses.
She's fabulous, she's
great.
Fabulous.
Just as a matter of interest, what is there anything in the past that you particularly liked? I mean, obviously About a Boy and A Long Way Down and Velvet Goldmine, and Muriel's Wedding was one of the first times about 20 years ago that we really saw her properly. She was Sixth Sense, she was big in that, etc. Changing Lanes. There was one, Little Miss Sunshine, the one that did it for me. Did you ever see Japanese Story?
Everyone's mentioned this film and I haven't seen it, and I have to see it. Everyone's mentioning
it. It's not so much because of the movie, even though it is, but there's a certain point of the movie when something happens in it. It's kind of I suppose you call it a twist, but it's like, holy shit, what's she going to do now? And it's so weird.
And when did she make that movie? Was it 1999 or something?
I don't know, yeah.
Because she was 26.
Maybe a bit later.
She was 26 when she did The Sixth Sense.
Mad to watch
it.
Right,
26.
26,
amazing.
Really?
And, you know, and there's another moment in The Way, Way Back when she figures out that Steve Carell is cheating on her. And it's just heartbreaking. And she came over here, we had her for 4.5 days.
That's when the party's happening, kind of. Is the party
it's incredible.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
That, yeah.
But for us, you know,
it was an outdoor party. What do you call it?
Yeah, on
things?
The beach party.
Yeah, the beach party.
But we had her for 4.5 days, and she came over and she left all her family behind her, and she came over into this mad environment where I just think she wanted to be energized again. And I think the script scared her, and she has this scene in the film, it's like 7 pages long, and she just wanted to be there, and she was an incredible person to work with.
Is that the soliloquy that she kind of has?
Yeah, she's an incredible actor, and she's a great friend of ours now.
Oh, yeah.
She's just awesome. She's just an incredible person. And I tell you, you'd be pushed to find anyone that doesn't like her.
Right, yeah.
You know?
That's
brilliant. True.
And in
very
fact,
true.
Is it true that you only had her and Will for just a few days?
Four and a half days.
For 4.5 days.
So that means you've got to get your shit together as well. In those
days. 16-day shooting total, you know.
Was it?
And we did like almost 400 camera setups in 3 weeks. And that's a serious amount of camera setups to do in that space.
But we had an incredible... We had an incredible committed crew as well.
We did.
This is the thing.
It was a very tight ship.
Glassland is such a hard film to make physically that everyone has to want to be there.
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing glamorous about it. They have to want to be there. I mean, Jack would collect me in the morning. Jack would drop me home. It, like, there was no cars. It was just all very much...
Yeah,
I suppose filmmaking at its barest, you know.
And just on the Transformers thing, I wanted to mention something. When you were training for that, if that's the right word for it, you're talking about up and down Venice Beach with a girlfriend and doing bicycles and all the rest of it.
Also,
stunt driving as well, right?
That was great.
Did you do Muscle Beach on Venice Beach?
Oh God, come on! I
see those guys.
I just find it so pretentious. Jesus,
I know
Christ.
That's the point I'm making, but that's LA.
Painful. It is.
LA.
That's why I live in Ireland.
Which has to be allowed buy in a little bit.
Yeah, totally. No, it was great. Crack, we had a brilliant time training out there for that film, and you know, just to have a couple of months just hanging out in LA in the sunshine and meeting Irish people and just hanging
there
out.
There is an incredible Irish community.
Yeah, there's
a guy out there from Skibbereen and Cork, his family are from North Kerry, his mother and father, Brian Carmody, and he runs an incredibly successful commercial company called Smuggler, but he's the main producer of Once on Broadway, and he's just amazing. You know, normal lad from Skibbereen, and it's great to have that community, you know. And you know, if you want it to get the better of you, it can, but I think these people really normalize it, you know.
But at what point is there some normality that's not there, Jack? Is it much like, is it when you see the posters everywhere you go with your big bloody mug on it, etc., and all these pictures? Like, I mean, when you see the you can't get bigger than a huge Hollywood than Transformers, and to just go in on that and just see how the set pieces are even made, to be a bloody observer of
it's mad. And again, like I was saying, you know, it's an awful lot to relate to. When it comes to the publicity, when it comes to, you know, seeing yourself and watching yourself on screen. I try my best not to let that stuff kind of shell shock me and phase me too much, but it's things like, you know, just having conversations with people and you're looking in your eyes and, you know, you're looking in their eyes and you just know that there's no sincerity back there, you know what I mean, that you might as well be talking to a shark. And that's interesting, and that can kind of throw you a little bit from time to time, and you go, hang on a minute now, why am I doing this? What's going on here? Is this the right thing? Am I going to be fulfilled by this, or am I just getting into somebody's financial game? You know?
We were doing some little press junkets in London last week for the film, and like we had 10 or 15 just nice little wanners sit down, you talk to them on video, and Jack turned to me and he said, you know, I used to do 60 a day. Right. I think we did 12, and you'd be exhausted from 12, not mind 60.
60 it's in one day.
64
lot,
minutes.
You know?
It's just frightening. It's a frightening experience.
I have no sympathy for you whatsoever.
I know. Of all the people to be preaching this one day.
Break here, lads. Just as a matter of interest, just to get back to your mother from the very beginning then, before I let you go, and that is, I presume, like, you know, the pride she gets looking at Last Land, was she kind of really shattered and shocked looking at the damn movie in terms of just the effect it can have on you?
I thought she was just really...
As in, like, Transformers is just, what's going on?
Yeah, of course. It's a very different thing. There's two totally different things for her. You know what I mean? But I think for her watching Glassland, she just thought that it was a really important story, just something that was worth telling, and she was proud of me for going and doing it, you know, which was great.
But I mean, her school has been the school of hard knocks. I mean, she was bullied in London at school, and kind of like, when you say it wasn't necessarily that much better when you came back home, even though you were still very young and wouldn't have known much about it, she would have told you, would it be slightly ostracised, you know, here's a woman with a baby, doesn't have a husband kind of thing?
I mean, there's obviously going to be a bit of that when you are coming back from the United States in 1994 at 23 years of age with a little blonde boy with an American accent. There's bound
and also
to be.
Would she have been expected to have stayed there? She didn't stay too long there necessarily. Do you think when she went in 91 or 92 or whatever it was, do you think she might have stayed?
See, they'd only moved from Dublin down to Wicklow in like the late 80s, so by the time they left for the States in the 90s, they hadn't really built a community around themselves by that stage, you know. So it was kind of like, you know, they might as well have been moving down from Dublin. It just so happened they were coming from the States. But I mean, I saw a lot of that as I was growing up. People from Dublin, same thing, people moving down from Dublin and finding themselves ostracised in the community down there as well, you know. So there's a lot of that in Ireland. I think it might be getting a bit better, but there is still a lot of
and
it.
And I think I just need to get the rights to that family movie, because that's got everything.
That's the one, Jared. It's been a real pleasure. And thanks a million for talking to us, Jared. Good on yourself. And good luck with all the stuff that you're doing.
Tell
Leo we said hello.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah. And as for you, Jack, tell your mother we said hello. And don't forget to say hello to Vince Vaughn. And like, when you make a movie like that with him, does it just go? Delivery Man. Do you just bump into him again or don't bump into him again?
You might bump into him again.
Now, by the way, you will be bumping into the people from Transformers again, won't you?
Because
you've got two more to do.
I don't know how many. I mean, I think, you know, when you sign up for these things, generally they come in threes, you know, you're contractually obliged. But I think with the Transformers thing, it looks like it's developing and shifting in all sorts of different ways. So it remains to be seen how it's going to play out.
All right, listen, Glassland remains to be seen by a lot of people, so go see it. It's brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, guys. Very much indeed for dropping in. Onwards and upwards.
Thank
Enjoy
you,
the road, because if you don't, you're a feckin' idiot.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.